I do think that one of the, in the Hamburg refugee conference, there was one panel with people from the Kolbstrasse and the, around the NSU killings. For those, it's, anyway, it refers to a longer history of experience of racist violence in Germany. And the panel was not about telling about the specificity only about that, but it was raising the question, how do we actually, these are very different, how do we leave the space in where we struggle each sort of, each specific story of political deprivation, of oppression, how do we leave the space of having these stories struggle against each other, but to fight together?
Yeah.
Not a simple answer. But I think one of the, what you raise is generally, if you say education isn't school, education and this question of education and a media education is definitely one of those ways of saying, yeah, we need to also talk about education at large. Again, that's in general, this isn't about just, oh, here are some Germans and here are some refugees and how do we get each other to hear and listen, right? One gets German class and the other becomes a supporter. No, that obviously there need to be connections to other social struggles. And I do think one, it's that's why I sort of, I like this, we will collect, and this is, I think in all the workshops it was always, so how do we get access to information? And the information is also, there's all these different projects and knowledges out there, and the way they need to meet, and this is interesting, is across capacities and knowledges. So one knows how to program and the other actually has the real, has like the 20 years of anti-racist struggles knowledge. One knows how to work collectively and the other one knows how to translate 5 different languages. One understands how to read German bureaucracy and someone else actually knows how to, how to be a socially capable person. You know, but I mean, economic knowledge, political knowledge, and I do think this question of these identity narrative for me, because it starts with media economy, but it is really an economy of circulation, access, and resources that picks up other struggles, but that's ultimately isn't about just how to get heard with the individual story, because that mainstream media is doing that too. It lies somewhere else. Yeah.
So there's actually some ideas we made up in the other side. There's this one project workshop we started where media education and political education mixed up. This project was called Bildungsrouten gegen Nazis. So it's, how to say it in English? You could say something like storytelling against fascists, or something like that, and especially these anti-fascist political movement group is not so open to technology. They struggle a bit with it, but after this workshop, it was a very playful workshop. We did some kind of geocaching with mobile phones, like spot places in Berlin where something happened, maybe some good stories of fighting back fascists in Berlin, and you present these stories like success stories of driving Nazis in Berlin back, and in the end we made up this this route, this online route, and you can follow up, and you can go through Berlin and follow this route. So at some point you have to mix up really these educational levels and educational subjects, especially if it's a political movement. They sometimes, with good reason, are not so open to technology, you know. There's your data in the web, probably, and it makes you vulnerable.
The carnival.
The point also I wanted to say that that's now what the media or refugee movement in Berlin we are trying to do. And we are trying to bring out our own voices and also our own perspectives on the daily report and daily actions of refugees and also other people in solidarity with our struggle. You may find that we are not only reporting about the refugee struggle, but also those in our solidarity, both national and international. And through this network also, we came out with a newspaper, now we call Daily Resistance, and that's what I was looking, but it's not yet finalized, that's why it is not here. But very soon you will see this newspaper. It's called Daily Resistance. And this paper, it is full of our articles. We refugees, we are trying to publish ourselves. And our critics on the media and also the German bureaucrats, like the asylum laws and also European politics. So I think it's also one of the ways and which we must support strongly to. We must support this refugee self-organized platform. You know, like this one needs a real support. The radio needs real support. The refugee lag mobilization, we need support because it is also one of a direct, concrete way of publishing info or breaking invisibility and make ourselves visible and bring information to the refugees who are still in these isolated places. So it would be cool for you also from your side to start such public awareness within your framework. You know, to create this awareness within the German people, you know, to why not? You know, because you know better your society. We can tell, but still, some of you, you don't believe in our story. Still, you point and ask, no, no, but we want to know with you individually, your reason why you are here. My reason of coming here, it is here. But because of the structures, as you said, we are living in, the structure of divide and rule, still we follow that. We want to know personal story. And that's why you see that due to the current wave of refugees, it has drawn much attention within the mainstream society, you know, because Angela Michael came out and raised the voice, so immediately people saw that there's a problem. Oh, these people, they have a real problem, so we have to come out and welcome them on the Uber. But the refugees who are trying to against the German policies, asylum policies, we are not given the attention. So I think this is a serious issue and we have to look into.
No, in terms of, and it's just like a question for everyone, not just for you, but sometimes I think the speech, for example, if you want to target the policymakers, sometimes has to be like even less aggressive. It's just like, for example, I'm just thinking about, for example, the title of the newspaper. And actually, we think it's a, we identify, like, there's a need to listen to the stories of what's happening and your perspective. For example, even the title is a bit, like, aggressive, and maybe the normal German walking citizen is not going to be interested in that. So sometimes I think it's in terms of storytelling and narration that the wording also needs to be appealing for other, like, types of persons that are, that might be reading that, for example, are not aware of what's happening. But even if you use, like, sometimes a too disruptive language, people, it's not interested in reading those stories. For example, I know there are some websites and blogs about the situation, but sometimes people is just in Facebook and suddenly it starts, like, I also think about what's happening, for example, in Latin America, and a very similar case with what happened in Mexico with the students that they killed and they actually, like, disappeared. People don't want to read that. And actually it's something really serious, but it's about wording, it's about how you phrase the stories, it's about, it's not changing the story, it's maybe just about titles. And it's too revolutionary, like, blogs people don't want to read. So sometimes I think you need to change a bit the discourse just to reach another audiences. And it's about targeting what type of people you want to listen. But also I think it's, if you want to reach, like, bigger audiences, sometimes you need to do a bit more, not too soft, to make it like a soft stories, but also try to change a bit the wording.
Maybe to connect to your point, I think it's really important there again to think about the goals. I mean, it's perfectly legitimate and it's necessary in an unfair situation to also be angry, and it's necessary to express that anger. It's a good thing that exists. But at the same time, if you look at the political side of it and you have some political goals, you have to kind of consider who how in that given situation lies with. And I think if we're talking about, for example, protesting against sharpening or limiting asylum rights, like it happened recently, it's really important to understand the mentality of the people who are sitting in the Bundestag and who you're talking to change them. I mean, like, it's one thing to disagree with them, and, like, that is, I also disagree with that law, but it's another thing to kind of see where you can tackle their narrative and kind of get to them.
Do you think the narrative tackling is a question of affect?
How do you mean?
You mean to be able to tackle the narrative of the...
No, maybe that was the wrong wording, but, like, if
party
you...
Party politicians who are used to owning the law and...
No, but
is
I mean,
a question
like,
of affect? I'm
I mean, like, really often, like, if, like, I worked for a while in, like, a local member of parliament's office, which was a social democrat, and there was, like, if I read the Dutch border, and there's a nuclear power plant, for example, on the Belgian side, that is completely, like, the thing is crap. And should be closed down. And there's a lot of activism directed, just as an example there, there's a lot of activism directed against this nuclear power plant, but it's not really directed in a way that it meets the people that actually sit at the center of the decision-making there. Like, there's, for example, demonstrations in Belgium happening, but no one ever wrote just a letter or came into the office of this member of parliament who actually has a lot more influence there to have a personal conversation about that. I don't think that is happening right now. That, like, I think right now there's a lot of activism happening, but it can be, like, I'm not justifying the act of passing that law, but it can be overwhelming for an individual parliamentarian, for example, someone in the administration, to be confronted with this huge block of outrage, which that person doesn't necessarily understand, not because they don't want to understand it, but because it's just almost a different language, like, it's a different narrative, it's a different paradigm. And I think there has to be happening a lot more of this kind of communicating something to someone who's not necessarily one's opinion.
What I feel often like of is like a positive or a wishful vision or a narrative where we could go with all this and where then the refugees are a integral part of. It's like imagining the city where like it's very normal that refugees are not an exception, but they are kind of a normality, where there are other groups of people who are here in very different situations as well, and how we can bring up the narrative that includes them, and this is a wishful thing that people can agree on, like an open, collaborative, sustainable city or something like that. I don't know if this is the point, but I often like there's a lot of like critique, a lot of like and a lot of like negative or working with fear or working like with the apocalypse, like Pegida, for example, is doing. And often by activists, I have an activist background, but as well in activist circles, there's a lot working as well with the fear and with catastrophe and with like dark visions. And on one hand, it's useful and it can bring about change, but what I feel is the lack of like as well pride visions, and this can as well be useful for really like inside, for example, structures to create more access of it, like bring about the change and make people to open up for change.
So what we were just talking about right now, it has a lot to do with like how to phrase things, but I really am quite wary of this idea of saying that we have to center the feelings of people who are enormously privileged, because this also, there's the question of labor and of classism. Like some people don't have access to a type of language that will sort of coddle those in power. Some people have accents, some people don't have perfect grammar, some people don't have that vocabulary, right? And also, the activists are working for free. Like, everybody is really exhausted, and parliamentarians it's their job. So, I understand that, of course, they don't want to listen, blah, blah, blah. We know that. But, like, just, like, centering their feelings, and, like, it's their job, they're being paid for it. And, like, why and people are angry for a good reason. But then to put the onus on the activists and on the people who are being marginalized to like care for this sort of fragility of highly privileged people who are being paid a lot of money and they're not doing their job.
Well, this might be correct as a moral perspective on the issue, but if we are asking ourselves what would be the most efficient or effective way to go, we might need a variety of different ways. But there has to be this, I would completely agree with what you said, there has to be a story and a place for expression of anger and of to identify problems and to make problems visible. This is extremely important. But on the other hand, there has to be, or there should be, if we want to be politically influential, other ways and other kinds of stories to reach other goals. For instance, talking about politicians, it might be their job to do that or not. They are predominantly responsible to their voters. In the first place, and in my experience, and I know people sitting in the Bundestag, in my experience, those change in politics, this more aggressive stance against refugees, it's not coming from most of the politicians themselves. They are reacting to pressures in the society, and this is the real problem, that there are big racist groups in society that are going aggressively also against the politicians when they are going to their voters' groups. They get a lot of what did you do and why and so on, and so I think we have to, one very important field would be thinking about ways to win over more people in the public, and I think you cannot do this with being too aggressive, so we have to need those different ways. And to add one thing, I think
one important field we have to keep in view is the social media, is Facebook, for because Facebook has become for many people news medium number one. And if I've been looking into Facebook sites of righteous persons for the last weeks, and it's really horrible if you what you can see there and how many they are and what they are thinking and what kinds of information is exchanged there. And this is also something we would have to address. I think we would have to do some counter speech or counter visuality in these fields also.
I think we have to. The problem is that we're coming to an end. We're supposed to also to sort of. And I think what we should do is basically do a closing round, which means, of course, we don't have that. But everyone sort of say, I know this is kind of cutting it short, but it's opening up a huge new area if we start to discuss racism, either as an opinion or as a structure, and how to go against it. And but I think maybe this is what we should just that everybody can. I'll just collect, and if it only will be how to continue, what's open, what was missing, what we like. And the other thing I'd like to invite everybody, in case you want to do that, because there's continuously in all the workshops the need for more exchange and for being sort of fed into networks of exchange. There's an Excel list here. I'll try to open up a new sheet where you can put your name and email, and if you want also what your background is or where your special interest is. You can also use, I guess, abbreviations, but an email address would be good, or some other form of contact. I didn't start that sheet, that's why and it will be handled only within the framework of the house here, but if you want to be sort of to receive, to I guess it's for further exchange. Then that would be a good idea.
And if one is already on another list, is it an extra list? Or
no, I don't think we need. I mean,
it's going to be one list, right?
I think it's going to be one
not
list. As I said, I didn't start it. I only learned
list.
From it before we sort of sat down. So I don't think that will be according to.
Okay,
because
no,
people went to various.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's better, right? Otherwise, yeah. It's too special.
I'll work with this after this, but I think it should be just so that everyone, whatever, and I try to write. You want to start, or would you like to start? I think you should have the, since you're only here. Whatever closing remarks, what you were missing, what you would like to hear more about, what is what sums up, what is your key in, whatever closing remarks, and I'll write.
In my reading, handwriting.
Okay. It's unlearning, really. I don't know how many of you still use their handwriting. I start to be. I start to not be able to read my own handwriting. Anything? You don't have to. No? Anything? You can also then still at the very end. Would you like?
He has a suggestion.
Yeah?
For the comfortness of the refugees. And the crowding population in social. That's a really big problem today because old people, young people all go there. Okay, and they have to. Their job should be more easier to be done there.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's witnessing that there are really huge problems at that place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. willing that, the refugees would have the chance to work here. Each refugee is a potential, also a working potential. Each one has different skills that they could be all used.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then we can say that it was both a political demand. We asked what could be a political demand, and it was a reframing of the notion of the refugee. What it stands for.
Okay. I've just wrote it all down.
Yeah. I think that I would like to reflect more on. I don't like the word structure. So I would like to reflect more on how narration can include words like moral experience or plural or pluralism. And I think that what is for me thinking about how ethnography can affect social change or something like that, what is my experience is that it could be so interesting not to think about refugees, non-refugees, civil society, supporters and all of this, but thinking about, like in ethnography, how the misunderstanding, the prejudice that it's there, how this has an impact on the interaction between me and the other, and how this can maybe create new space of action, or maybe can inhibit a role, because I know that there are many activists and there are that don't like the way migrants think about political protest. It's a very different way of thinking about it. And so what is the impact of this in the interaction?
Yeah. We're doing sort of one closing round. You get the last word. There where you sit. You want to say now?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
But the last one, okay.
No, the round will continue. Okay. We just started.
But it was about the method of wording. I wanted to comment.
Yeah.
That there's a problem of principle of understanding in the society we are living. I think even if we will change our mode of telling our stories in a nice way, people who feel that foreigners are not welcome, they will never welcome us here. Even if we change the daily news resistance and say daily happiness or daily, whatever we may say, they're helping. Still, the Pegida people will never change their way. As long as we are coming or we are here, still they will raise up and against us. And the main media still will main post a negative on us. The mainstream conservative politician, they will still remain in their angle because that is their principle of understanding other world, other people, other humans. So I think this is really a political issue, and we have to remain on the political understanding or belief. Focus, not to be diverted. Mainstream, they have been telling us this. You know, politicians, they have been telling us this, that we are too aggressive, we are not ready to respect the German. Instead of protesting, we should be calm and respect the legal system, all sort of. But we have been respecting, I have been respecting 2 years. You know, nothing I got. Only rejection. And when I came out to resist, 3 months, they said, I am banned away from Germany. They gave me Ausweisung, which completely excluded me from Germany. But I said, no, this is my fundamental right. I am demanding, which you, German, you accepted when you signed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So where it is, and it is clear also in your constitution, during the opening, Silvia was reading all these. No? So where are they? Where Germany has put all these principles of understanding the human being? So that's what we should use, our platforms, and that's what I said, appropriately. You know, the civil society must put forward these questions to our authorities, to our respective offices, you know, where we belong, and change things.
Well, I would not be quite that pessimistic. I think the minds of people can and have to be changed, and we can also reach some people with biases. And to do that, we need a variety of stories and strategies fitting different goals and target groups.
Okay.
With different stories and different different stories for different target groups.
Okay. We need different a variety of stories and strategies fitting different goals and target groups.
Okay.
Yes. What I would like to add is. We were starting why radio? And we could also say why film, why theater, why news, and so on. We don't have to think in these categories because you can mix it. So we spoke about drama. Many images we see do belong to drama. We don't have to think only in terms of drama. We can mix it with comedy, for example. So we don't have to use these formats, like now it's dramedy and it's a formatted program. It takes such a long time that it was becoming conventional. But we can deal with conventional forms of storytelling. We have to be aware of these forms, and then we can do a lot by mixing them. We don't have to. We are, especially in this context, we have every freedom to tell stories in many different ways. So that's and we can combine mediums. Just take a look at one production at the Schaubühne at the moment, Ungeduld des Herzens. It's a mixture of different mediums. You can say it's radio on the stage.
I wrote it down. We have
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely. So, yeah, completely agree with that. It is low skill and high sensitivity is really the target. It was such an important Congress to be here and these morning and afternoon sessions for me to hear these conversations and everything, structure, framing, wording, how important, and history and everything. When it comes to my practice within, and many people's practice within the participatory space and participatory video and digital storytelling. So yeah, thank you so much for everyone's contribution. I've learned a lot. Did you want to say something? I felt like you had your hand raised. You wanted to add something.
No, I'm sorry.
No, I'm done, but I just didn't know if you wanted to say.
Is there a minute?
No.
Thank you.
I enjoyed the discussion also. It was really interesting because especially I'm not from the media arts, more from linguistics and gender studies. But for me it was interesting, especially what you told us about your experiences and the mixture of theoretical and practical activistic level. And learn from or making transfers from also the big categories, gender, class, and race. So it's really important to be in the discussion and to analyze together what's going on. And because for me also it's a political issue and more on a political level than on the level of the singular persons or people, or what do we want, or what's good, what's bad. It's more, yeah, I said this before, it's about the structures we have also in our German system and the social problems which are really popping up now in the context of new people coming here. And not, and I often heard also today the refugee crisis, and I don't want to talk about.
It's
like
the
this.
Summer of migration.
That's really
no, it was like when it started. When it started being called the refugee crisis in the summer,
yeah.
People from Border Monitoring published a paper, and they weren't the only ones. So the summer is over, but they called it the summer of migration, and I think it is. I mean, if they also wanted to say whatever you say, you know. Obviously, it's horrendous. We have Dublin, but Schengen Europe, sort of the fact that Dublin is also, it's failing. It's not working. They create hotspots, but it's not working, and we need to look at these aspects as well. So they call it crisis, we call it, this is the political movement of migration.
Yeah. And also this with a combined with a historical point of view, and not only far away, but also in the nearer past, we see the results of the borders around Europe.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about having these newcomers here. They also brought their different realities, which may not be so accessible for people who have never experienced living in other realities, and just being different doesn't need to be contrary, like opposing or something like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean necessarily that. No, I don't know how to formulate it. It's
I put newcomers in new realities, I think that's. Yeah. Instead of news.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I would like to point on the political situation and chances, especially to point on why are the people leaving their homes. It's because of political situations, it's because of economical situations, it's because of wars. And who is responsible for all that? Because when these situations will not change, then people will forced to leave their homes. Yes, will go on to be forced to leave their homes. And I think especially the economical situations, it's important to inform about. It's not easy, it's complicated, but I think it's very important. And I think It's my experience that now people from the, I say, normal society, now they are in a way open to hear about that because now it's connected to their own life. New people are coming, and now they have to think why they are coming. Mm-hmm. Until now, it was more easy to reject that topic.
Mm-hmm. No more hiding.
And if that will not change, then people will be forced to leave their homes. That's just it. For me, it was actually quite hard to follow because it was a wide mixture of ethical, moral, political, humanitarian arguments. It was a wild mixture, and of course it is, the whole topic is. But I think, or I find it quite important to, whenever it is possible, to actually say whether my argument, my point I want to make is a political statement, is a moral statement, is an ethical statement. I know it's very hard, and often you can't do it, but I think to have a narrative and to tell a story and to try to make a point, it is important to say whether my argument is a political argument or not, or whatever, wherever it fits. And yeah, that's why I couldn't actually bring some of my ideas into, because I wasn't quite sure whether it fits in the dynamics of the moment. It's not bad or anything, it's just the way it was. Yeah, but to make a point and to build a narrative about whatever it is, and in this topic, I think it's important to make clear whether I talk about structure, or whether I talk about individual statements, whether I talk about economical relations that are reasons for migration and stuff. And I think the distinction between the kinds of arguments has to be very sharp, or as sharp as possible, to maybe make it easier to build a narrative that fits one's own agenda.
Which distinction should be clear?
The distinction between whether it's a moral statement, is it a moral point I want to make, is it a human, am I talking about humanitarian help, am I talking about individual points? It's hard to distinguish. I know that, but I think it makes it sometimes easier.
I would, I think I take from your, it definitely was very mingled and mixed, and but I would highly challenge you in this distinction between the moral and political.
I do myself.
No, but it's totally, I still, that's not, and I think one of the reasons that it is so mingled is 10 years ago in a catalogue, which was kind of bringing the story of migration into German mainstream, the Projekt Migration in Cologne, that was published by one of the very proliferant, also he publishes in four languages, Sandro Mezzara, a political scientist, and he said, Migration is a fait social total. It's an aspect that affects every part and everything in society, so it's very difficult to address it following one canonical logic. And he said that as a political scientist, learning to deal with aesthetics and images, and I think you're right in saying maybe there should be more clear distinctions in terms of what we actually talk about. But I would like to invite you to sort of, I don't know, undo the distinctions of discipline.
It is very
that's just my personal, that's a personal point.
I think so too. But to make an example, when I talk about structures, about economics, when I talk about why capital flows one way, why there is a crisis, there is the Arabische Frühling, as it is called, it is a quite, I think at least, it is a quite logical and logical chain of arguments you can make to prove a point. And to talk about this from a moral point of view, or ethical point of view, just, Favessa, just...
But that's because you're an outsider to the situation. So for you it's easy.
I wouldn't say I am.
You are an outsider to the situation.
No, because I am, how do you call it, participant in capitalist structures, and I'm at fault actually, because I live in the capitalist center of the world, or in one of the capitalist centers. So I am actually responsible, not personally, but structurally.
Okay, I'm writing that inside, outside of responsibility also.
Yeah. And then that again has to do with ethical and moral.
Okay.
Did I give a last little impulse?
Mm-hmm.
So I think for those of us who are not refugees but acting in solidarity, so allies, if you want to call them, or I prefer the word people acting in solidarity, I think it's important to remember the position from which we speak and our limited understanding of certain things, and also our privileges in having access to a certain type of media literacy as well, or to a certain type of language, to be multilingual, to have a certain access of, like, level of education, things like that. So it's very important that we know why that is and why others don't have it, right? And not use it and not think that this means we're smarter or better than others and therefore we have the right to speak over others, because that's really not true at all. But we have more access, right? And it's really important to always stay self-critical, and every time to think before speaking as well, like, where do these convictions come from, where do our ease of mobilizing certain media, where does that come from, like, what are the privileges that come from? And also when we speak as a we, like, that we is not universal. Like, there are German people who act inside who act in solidarity, but their position is not going to be the same as Ausländer who live here, right? Or people who have, or there's some people as well who came here and who are former refugees or who are children of refugees, right? So it's not this monolithic we. And we have to be aware of, as media professionals or something, who work in this field, we have to be aware of our role and responsibility as well, and try to use these skills that we have gained through this position of privilege for good, like, use those skills to amplify people's voices, and also to use our access to our own visibility, let's say, as a sort of Trojan horse, I think. And yeah, to amplify voices, but also not to be enamored, not to be in love with that idea of, like, being a savior. And to always resist and dismantle the savior narrative, I think that's really important. No?
I like that. See, use your skills as amplifier.
Yes.
Amplifying.
But not being in love with that position of, like, oh, I'm a loudspeaker.
Yeah.
Like, there's no real value in that. It's like, it's almost a kind of responsibility to use those skills for that.
I just want to pick up your point, because I also want to say that it's really important, I think, if we talk about narration visibility, which ultimately an aspect of communication, that communication always is a goal and certain means. And that it's really important to differentiate there, and especially then between kind of a procedural understanding of certain processes and the moral aspects of them. Just saying that you have to use certain means, that certain means are most effective in facilitating certain actions, doesn't mean that you make a moral statement, but it's more of an observation. And it's really important to be able to differentiate between kind of understanding how the system works and judging the system. I think that's two related, but still two distinct points. If you
can just go on in there.
Yeah, I was also thinking the metaphor of amplifying the voice, but also in this part of choosing identifying the goals and the procedures to fit those goals, because I was also thinking in the part of the agenda setting. If you want to change or shape the agenda setting, you have to choose the correct objectives and probably the correct discourse in order to be able to shape the agenda setting. So probably that point that was
pointed out before, to choosing the goals is also very important.
Yeah.
Okay, for me, it was really hearing like all the perspectives was really interesting, and my conclusion or what I take home is that from our like positions, we really need to continue like working and to find like ways for narration to become a bridge between policymakers, between society, between the new friends, in between everyone. I think narration and visibility can be a bridge. So we need to be creative and continue working on that.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of, you know, as I was thinking, as the world becomes more global, you know, it doesn't mean that it's becoming more common or homogenous. And in fact, actually, it makes our commonalities and differences more pervasive. It heightens them. And I think as storytellers and people making the narrative, it's important actually to consider those commonalities between cultures, not just the differences. And that means that it's not just about holding the microphone to the other culture. It's also about questioning our own position, our own cultures in relationship.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think also so much. I think what you said, when somebody said, you know, let's not think we are helping them, but what they're doing to us. And I think one of the reasons that attracts probably a lot of people here who are Germans or half Germans or live here is precisely that it's a moment of opportunity also for us to change our society and to maybe even overcome some of the problems that have been there for a really, really long time. Right? Not just
what
for
not what not now? What when? What if not now?
Yeah, and it's not, you know. So it's not the refugees are new. We have also the illusion that oh, now we have outsiders. We have all the time outsiders. You know, I've been told I'm a migrant, although I'm born and I have a German passport. So I think that is very important to keep in mind and to create in that way solidarity, no matter where we are from. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe we can close here.
Pino
wanted
to say something.
Yeah, I will close, not close, but I will end up with my phone word by putting much emphasis, and I liked it that you ended it with, because that one, it has also...
Don't be in love with the savior narrative.
Yes, it has been a big point in our refugee struggle, that some of our friends in solidarity with us, they have given us impression that they're our solution, which is a wrong attitude to the political struggle. And so my call it is that let us use, as you said, the skills we have, the privileges we have, in order to empower our new friends. But not as saviors. Let us create platforms by giving each other time and space like this to come together and reflect on our issues, why today we are here and there. I think that should be the proper approach. On let it be on short-term goal or on a longer-term struggle. We should be able to strategize our struggle or our struggle. Yeah, it's be strategic.
I like this. Let's give each other time and space. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Thank you all for the time.